Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Brace yourselves for unknowable horror, because the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program has returned. Yes, Nerdy Show's beloved RPG audio drama of black comedy and Lovecraftian horror is back with an all-new series, a chilling tale called The Terrible Secret of Lot X. Head to CthulhuMystery.com or find the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program wherever you procure fine podcasts. Succumb to the maddening call of Cthulhu.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. Before we get too far into our stuff, I think I want to play...
Russian roulette, can I opt out?
No, let's do, what do you say to a little bit of Doug Watch?
Oh, let's do a Doug Watch, yeah.
Let's do a Doug Watch.
So I know that Doug has been working on some stuff with Cap called Kate Was Here. It's a one-on-one RPG game.
Ooh, Doug isn't an assassin for hire. He does it for the love of the game.
Yeah.
However, there have been some whispers of other foul play afoot in the Philippines.
Ooh, in the Philippines.
That's what the Doug Watch was about.
Speak of the devil. Disparage his name and he comes.
We'll use the extra chain. I should have put this together. I should have been able to put this together.
Alright, let me cue up his mic.
I'm now angry at myself that I didn't know.
It's odd for Josh to instigate Doug Watch. That was a true surprise.
I just got to get closer to the mic, too.
So what's the when the door kicked open, my brain didn't even register you standing there. I was like, Quest! You know? 20 yep. More.
Are we rolling now? Like, am I?
Yeah, we were rolling.
Oh, we're all going.
Okay, because I was going to say, before I was so rudely interrupted, we were on Scoundrel Step 3, I think. So
yes.
I had some great ideas for Step 3, so, you know.
Please.
Everybody, welcome to Design Episode 49 of RPG from Scratch. It has been a bit. This is COVID time, so things get pretty dicey when it comes to schedules. But we got a great surprise for the listeners. We have Mr. Doug Banks.
Hello.
So it's been a while since you've been here, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like the change to the setup other than the big mess in front of you right now?
This is comfortable. Before, we had the table in a different position, mm-hmm. and it was like... It was weirder to walk around, and I can see that we've streamlined as little as it may be. This feels more streamlined and
for
uniform.
Sure.
And these headphones are way comfier than the ones I was wearing before.
Yeah, those are the ones I edit with.
Oh, okay.
Those are the big boy ones.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, they're the open backs. So before we get into RPG from Scratch, I kind of want to touch mm-hmm. base with you.
Mm-hmm.
We started doing Doug Watch before you got here, but now we have it from the man himself.
Yeah.
What have you been up to?
Tell us about the Philippines.
Well, my travels around the world were cut short due to COVID. I've been self-isolating because I'm currently staying at my dad's, and he is at high risk because he's had history of asthma and everything else. Mm-hmm. So I've been isolated indoors a lot, which I don't mind because I'm an indoors person. I'm a you know, gamer nerd. So.
Do you regret causing COVID at this point?
Mistakes were made.
Okay.
But the time indoors has gotten me into looking into other RPG systems. A lot of stuff went on sale and I would buy it. I've been running games online, and I think Josh was talking about, I've been running the one-player RPG called Kate Was Here.
Yeah.
The whole reason I did that was because I'm like, I don't know if I'd get comfortable doing this. This is way outside my wheelhouse. I don't know.
Seems very intimate if you haven't done it.
Like, yeah, and very contrary to how I usually run a game, this is very open sandbox, very fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants, very like, I'm not going to prepare. Everything wants me to prepare, but I'm going against my instinct and intentionally going in like as blind as possible to as a GM. And that's been an interesting sort of hurdle to get over. But I do feel like it has made me better. And at first, when it's very intimate with one player, I've grown very comfortable with it. Because when you have a player who's like ready to throw themselves into it and just go with like whatever you do and contributes as much, you're not as managing as much as the other players. So it's easier to tricks, you know, like to be like, oh, well, then there's this and this like this sort of sleight of hand type of thing.
Instead of being like, okay, one of them wants to kill the other one and steal from
Right. It comes with a whole other list of problems that
self-loathing, existential dread.
not really. It's just, it's the same kinds of, I don't even say problems, it's just part of the game. There's the same hurdles to overcome in the game as you would with a party of people. Mm-hmm. But there's very different solutions to those problems because it's one player. We could do a whole dissection.
So there's
of
only
that,
one player like. In combat.
Yeah, everything else is NPC. But
when do you use your phone when it's not your turn in combat?
That's the other thing. It kind of cuts down on people like falling asleep at the wheel. It's just like, what are you gonna do? Oh, sorry, I wasn't listening. He's like, there's no one else here. I've been talking to you this whole time.
No, that's why it's way more offensive.
But yeah, I could talk endlessly about it, but I did feel like I've learned a lot, and I am a better GM because of it, so I would recommend trying it at least once. The whole premise of Kate Was Here was that, again, me doing an experimental GM thing, I wanted to try and tell a story, or have a player experience a kind of story that would sweep them off of, like, not off of their feet, like romance, but, like, sweep them up into an adventure that they weren't anticipating. So the example I was giving was I was telling, hey, Cap, I want to play a Jurassic Park RPG. Do you want to play? And if she says, yeah, then she'd be like, all right, what type of character do you want to make? She's like, oh, I want, you know, someone who could run, jump, shoot, and punch dinosaurs. And it's like, well, great, but that's not what Jurassic Park is like. If you want to live in Jurassic Park, I got to say, Cap, I'm making an RPG. I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but you're about to go on a cruise ship. You know, and you're going to go on a vacation, and then, oh no, here comes a rogue wave. Oh no, you're washed up on an island. How do you survive? Oh gosh, I don't know. Then like 2 hours into it, I go, you finally see some signs of civilization. There's a Jeep, and there's mud all over it. And as you run over to the Jeep, and you smear the mud off the side door, it says Jurassic Park. And that's when you go,
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So the idea that if you're going to get wrapped up in a story that takes you from the ordinary world into some special Spielbergian or heightened film reality, mm-hmm. which obviously I'm a big cinematic storytelling kind of guy.
Are you?
I think of myself as, maybe not in physical terms, but emotionally, I'm very invested.
Just being sarcastic, Doug.
But this is a story that is, it is based on an IP, but it's a mystery on purpose, so that when you, the listener, and Cap get to have that same reveal at the same time, and Cap went into it completely blind, had no idea what was happening until the big, like, shoe drops, and then suddenly it's like, oh, fuck.
So why did you pick the Borrowers?
It's not the Borrowers.
Because it's the best story ever
told. I'll say the genre going into it, what I told Cap as a prompt is it's a contemporary sci-fi adventure story that has mild, very, very light dystopian elements, but it is a hopeful sort of trajectory.
So player piano, got it.
But you'll see, you'll hear rather, if you decide to listen.
That's awesome.
The other part of the experimental nature of it is that with Ghostbusters Resurrection and other Nerdy Show and Omniverse programs, we do a lot of post-production work with music and effects and everything. I'm doing it live with a soundboard.
Ooh.
And I've had mixed results trying to do that in the past with larger groups. I played a game of Indiana Jones with Josh and several other people, and it worked, but I think everybody felt a little like I was distracted because I was trying to do that at the same time. But thankfully, when there's only one other player, I could just be like, and some heavy shit just happened. Think about that. And then immediately, you know, like whatever. And the fact that there's an actual physical, not physical, but like an actual soundboard where I just hit a button and don't think about it instead of having to like scroll through a, you know, a window or whatever and find something. So
not to mention, since you're being recorded, so Cap can't just have her own internal thoughts about things. She has to.
Yeah.
She has to kind of go over her character's thought process for the sake of the listener. It gives Doug time to catch up.
That's true, too. But the whole thing is uncut, so all my ums and uhs and, you know, all the raw dead air of me being like, oh, shit, I didn't think of that. You know, like, like you can it's just a really raw experience.
That sounds cool.
I do now have a question about the game itself, though.
Uh-huh.
Is there a mechanic that allows you to talk to yourself, or is that just what you do in it?
Well, what like, do you mean, like, talk
like,
to yourself?
Like, does it, when the player is explaining their motivation to you, does it feel like when you're in an adventure game, oh, and like, the characters is it... just be like, oh, a monkey, I wonder if you could pry something off with that.
Mm-hmm. No, like, so no, I mean not particularly. The IP that this is in doesn't necessarily have that thing to it,
mm-hmm.
but because it's such a collaborative, it's very story focused, not so much combat focused.
Mm-hmm.
But because it has that constant back and forth, Cap has no problem speaking out loud, like, "Oh, I don't know what to do. I'm kind of whatever." And I can actually use that feedback to alter what NPCs do to her, because there's been many instances, because she's playing a younger character too. She's playing like a high schooler, and she's just like, I'm a kid. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm scared of my fucking mind. Like, there's things about to go down. Some heavy shit's about to happen. And then I'm like, well, an NPC says maybe you should do... like, comes in and kind of helps put things back on track, because in character, she's very much like, I'm not qualified to handle this. So having her speak that out loud, out of character, fits in with how we're collaboratively building this story.
So I kind of want to deal with some higher level stuff now. Like, well, higher level. Conceptual stuff.
Cerebral things. Good thing Doug's here.
Mm-hmm. Ephemeral. Some would say.
Adding more Jesus into the game?
Can we not?
Okay, Jesus. We'll put that right on there.
Here put a pin in that.
Yep. Human sacrifice. Let's get that in there.
No,
I mean,
it's...
we've had that for forever.
It's not cannibalism if you're not human.
That, well, yeah.
But Kelton eats pig.
Yeah, that's cannibalism, yeah. Well, I don't know. Hey. If I eat monkey, it's not cannibalism.
But I mean, he just straight up, like, if he kills...
He'll eat guff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kills a guff.
Well, I mean, cannibalistic rituals are important for many cultures.
Yeah.
So my biggest first concern is, now that we've played this a few times and we've introduced the dice to your system and in alternate ways to level up, do players level up too quickly? And when I say too quickly, lovely being like, there's no amount that's too quick. Let them have fun. Every time you level up, you're taking on new information. Mm-hmm. And in our system, maybe quite a lot of it. Is the pace too fast for this to feel like a natural progression?
Well, isn't leveling up the player's choice?
It is. But let's break it down to a typical playgroup, right? So we've got 5 total people, 1 GM, 4 players. And then every other week, somebody's leveling up. Like, let's say the same player is leveling up every 2 weeks. I would say that's too fast.
Yes, and I... But that has not been my experience playing this game.
This is just a... This is a... hypothetical.
If you're leveling up too fast, I wonder if you're not spending your momentum.
Sure, but like, then you're like, but then you're still choosing to level up.
But it's your choice. It's like, yeah. I think the idea of someone going too fast is ultimately up to a player and a GM, because if you have a group like the group, let's just say in this example, and one player is leveling up, like not spending any momentum, leveling up every single chance they get, everyone else is like, listen, we're actually like playing the game. We're saving momentum. We're not doing that. If they start to outpace the group, then that would be a problem.
Well, I guess that's not really what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about player balance or even power creep at all, at least for this hypothetical. What I'm worried about is this cognitive load too high for a player.
Well, but they voluntarily take it on.
Sure. But you voluntarily take it on. But is there a... I guess, how would I put this? I think there are two ways to probably curb this. I don't know if it's true. I want to introduce this because now you can level up at 20 momentum by just increasing a skill, right? Mm-hmm. Or increasing a attribute.
Yeah.
Or you can increase a profession to, and once you do 3, you've leveled up. Now, if you take another step, step 4 Citadel is hefty cognitive load.
I agree with that.
How much time should you have at a level until you feel like your character is progressing? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There is a reward to leveling up that means less if it happens every week, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay. So how quick, let's say number of sessions, right? Like, number of sessions you should spend at a level where it's reasonable. I would say 4 is maybe a good number.
I was going to say 4, yes.
Yeah.
Because if you meet once a week for a month, at the end of the month, you level up. That seems all right.
It seems roughly okay. And 4 sessions at one level. And let's imagine you're spending momentum the whole time. You're doing the things.
And but also, like, 7 is so much where you would level up. You would get to the level up point, and you would either have so much anticipation, or you would have forgotten that that's a thing you do. Oh, shit. Okay.
And what's the cosmic average on sessions played? Is it 7?
Yeah, is it like... if each four sessions is each session 3 hours, 2 hours.
I just mean before a party breaks up.
I would say most most playgroups, well, before COVID,
yeah.
most playgroups would probably say 4-hour session, right? Mm-hmm. Four-hour session is the average, and we try to meet once a week or once every other week. And then if it takes 4 sessions to level up, I don't really want to get bogged down in the math. I just kind of want to feel the full shape of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then we should probably shoot for that and pay attention, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. if it starts to feel like we're shooting way past that, like we're leveling up way faster than that, then that's probably a problem that we can address by making very small tweaks. But I am worried about the cognitive load of me being like, well, I guess I'll just level up again. Like, that doesn't feel good. Mm. You know, just being like, yeah, like, oh, well, I've got, yeah, I guess I'll level up, whatever. Like, that sucks. You know, you want to be stoked about it.
Yeah.
But then the person who's not spending momentum can potentially succeed on every role and get, you know, that snowball going and get more and more momentum, which is good. I like that method of play, but I think the only way to kind of reel both of them in is to increase difficulty until it matches, right? Because the person who's saving their momentum to level up doesn't want to die if they lose this role.
Yeah.
So they're probably going to have to spend momentum. And then the person who is not leveling up, if you keep increasing the difficulty, it's like, okay, yeah, you succeeded the role, but you didn't do enough damage.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of that baked in already, because mm-hmm. we were doing the solo sessions. We're 4 sessions in. No one is leveled up.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the one of the main problems is trying to explain to players who have never played before
mm-hmm.
how important it is to not have your tank at half health, and how that is very, very dangerous.
Yeah, keep them topped off for sure.
Like,
yeah, it's. I think when I was playing as Frixa, I think every round of combat, I was like, Doug, what's your health at?
Yeah.
Doug, what's it at?
Still one of the most beautiful moments of gaming. Doug's finally in a hallway.
Yeah.
God damn it.
That was when I was just like, oh, now it's a game.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't a game. It was a meat grinder.
Yeah. You knew what my character was, and you built a hallway. You built a bottleneck.
I know I did.
It's nice to be able to do the thing your character was
doing.
I
also knew
right.
Max was playing. I figured he would do something stupid.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we can't really hit him with range attacks. And they're like, well, don't. Doug will just keep poking him until he's dead. Like, don't worry about it. Don't need range attacks.
I'll say,
you did the range attacks. You just took the -4, and we're like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
The great thing about Liam as a DM is that even when we are completely sabotaging whatever expectation he had, he goes with it and ends up being extremely memorable.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's some very positive memories from times where I could just see the face like, God damn, just what the fuck? Like, he's completely stewing.
Yeah, but then when like the 7 of us fought like the orc council or whatever.
I feel like the whole time we're trolling him as opposed to like playing a game. Like,
everybody getting one big clump. Yeah. Make him come to us and
lay the bodies of the slain assassins like a draw a line in the sand. That shit was dope.
So, all right. It's just good to have everybody here. This is good. Well, then I guess we'll just keep an eye on that, because I do think that if I'm just leveling up by accident, that's not what we want. We don't want that. We want leveling up to feel like the story moment. We've done in our actual play campaigns, choosing to level up at instant speed is awesome in the moment.
It does. It's a good moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a moment I haven't had playing other tabletop.
Never.
Yeah.
I think the only times I've had that moment or something similar is in like video games, where the second you level up, your health and mana fully refill.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, new ball game.
Yeah,
folks.
And you're like, I was going to die, but here we go. Yeah, that's the closest I've gotten to it. Like,
and that is a good feeling.
You're in the middle of fighting like a dragon or a frost troll in Skyrim, and then suddenly it's just like in the middle of it, like, quick, hit tap, and you suddenly, you pick your stars, you come back down, great, we're ready to go.
So I guess what I'll move on to next is we've all now GM'd this system. What about skill challenges? I have not made something specifically to be a skill encounter. I've done it in Dungeons & Dragons and stuff like that, but I feel like in systems like Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder, you're either in a situation where you're using skill checks or you're in combat, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's generally, you're doing one or the other, and I would like for that line to be very blurred in our system about what counts and what doesn't, but I do feel like skill events have like a lot of utility. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. they really do help people decide what their characters are good at. You know, it creates fun story moments about, you know, especially when somebody fails. That's the best. How do we feel about skill challenges in our system? Are they too, like, I guess I used the word ephemeral already, but too vague?
No, I almost don't think they are, because in my experience of running games in the system, I use skill challenges pretty infrequently. Mostly I let it be a toolbox of how they interact mm-hmm. with the story. So I usually use skills for like as prep mm-hmm. more often than not, where it's like I augmented my shield to do a thing because I'm a tinker or I'm a mechanic or I do this or mm-hmm.
yeah I've been noticing that I use them as a kind of, I don't want to say crutch, tool. How about this? As a tool to kind of give me an answer I don't have. You know, where somebody's like, well, would it have this or would it have that? Well, why don't you roll to see if you would know that? And they roll really well. I'm like, it does. In fact, there's a place down the street. You know, like, that's where.
But I've noticed, like, let's say the detective rolls to investigate. But then so does the barbarian, so does the archer. Mm-hmm. And maybe the archer notices or something. But it's like, I don't know, does everyone just get in on that automatically?
That's something I think we talked about this before, and mm-hmm. it's somebody becomes the group leader for a group role.
Yeah.
Or everybody can roll individually, but I think mm-hmm. if everybody allows a group leader to roll, they get a bonus for each person. Like it's like aiding, except for you're not, you're giving up yours to let them do it. So maybe like a plus one bonus to the result for every person who chooses not to roll.
Yeah, and almost like that idea because the archer could notice something. Eagle-eyed archer could notice something mm-hmm. and then be like, hey, what's that? And the detective's like, cool. All right.
But it's just been like,
and a plus one bonus, I think, per is enough incentive to be like, well, if he's only getting a plus three, mine's almost the same as his. How about he gets a plus two and I'll roll two?
Yeah.
Like that's because then now the role play aspect of it is complete because you are pretty likely to notice too. You know, like that's it, you make the choice for your group. If you all are very perceptive, then everybody should be rolling because the odds are will work better. Yeah.
Yeah. Because just regular D&D would be like, I'm not that great at it, but there's no penalty for me not rolling. So why not in case mm-hmm. I get a 20? Like,
yeah. It should be the things I don't think should be able to roll on are things or choose to let somebody roll for the group is things like stealth.
Yeah.
You know, if you're trying to sneak past a group of people, everybody throw your hats in.
I will even say stuff that is very specifically trained mm-hmm. is also something that I don't let people roll. And they're like, I don't have any information on first aid. Let me try first aid. I'm like, no, because that person or someone mm-hmm. in the area would go, no, what are you fucking doing? You don't know what you're doing.
Local knowledge. If anybody does have in their background or whatever local knowledge, everybody there should be allowed to roll. But if you have a player who is from out of town, maybe they don't get to add to this at all.
Could it be that you add an element of risk to it for that the players would know before? So, for example, medical role. Like, we have a first aid kit here or whatever that we can do whatever, mm-hmm. and our healer is down. Okay, so who's going to be the one that does this? It's like, well, why don't we all try? Because what's the worst that could happen? Well, if you have the dumb barbarian who like literally has nothing and they're rolling just in case they get a critical success, there could be a penalty in place. It's like, well, listen,
infection.
If you fail by a margin of 10, you not only fail, you think you succeeded and made it worse.
I think just the potential that you didn't add to the person who's most likely to succeed on the roll.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably risk enough.
Yeah.
I guess if that makes sense. Like
for players who aren't murder hobos like crazies, you know?
Well, like, but think like, so the barbarian, you'd be like, okay, well, I get nothing to my role.
Mm-hmm.
This guy gets plus 10. We know the difficulty's 20.
Sure.
I could give that guy a plus one, or I could not give him a plus one and try to hit a natural 20. Like, I feel like that really, because then if neither of you get it, which is it's very likely the barbarian's not going to roll a natural 20.
Right.
So, I don't know. I feel like the risk will be relative to what happens when you fail, you know, depending mm-hmm. on the situation. But, I don't know. Table that, maybe? Just think about that, because our skill challenges, I've noticed, have been very unfocused compared to when it was Dungeons & Dragons and we created these whole encounters that were skill-based. I mean, I've done a couple things where I was like, when you're investigating, somebody do this, roll this, you're going to climb this, you know, and whoever fails, there's this much time. Mm. That's fun, but
it's a quick time event. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It. I feel like our skill system is general enough so that people hopefully won't feel encumbered or not wanting to risk rolling. You know, like, so if we're in combat and they're like, could I swing off that chandelier? And it's like, you could, maybe it would be this and this. And you're like, oh, I know I would not be able to do that, you know, unless I've spent like four momentum. And so
momentum. was going to say, but also momentum does add so much potential to just be like, no, I do it anyway.
Yep.
Because I'm heroic, damn it.
I think it's also worthwhile telling somebody the difficulty of a task if the difficulty would be obvious to their character.
Yeah.
Like, I want to swing on that chandelier. Okay, it's up high. It's this far away. It's a difficulty 20. And they'll be like, oh, it's that difficult? And you're like, well, you would be able to see that.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
Like, that's useful.
If you're looking at a jump between two buildings as a human being in real life, you go like, oh, I don't think I'd make that. You can, you have spatial awareness.
You feel confident up to the edge. And then
and you're like, nope.
There's many times I wouldn't even ask for a skill check. Like, I've played games where someone's like, well, I want to go climb this thing and jump off the thing. And I go, yeah, I'm not even going to give you a number because I'm telling you it's so tall, you'd be uncomfortable. And then most of the time the players have been like, oh, okay, I didn't realize.
Because once
you clarify, then it's, you know.
I guess that's where I feel like the number does have utility, though, right? Because if you're like, yeah, there's two buildings, they're this far apart. He's like, oh, I should be able to make that jump, right? And he's like, I think maybe you don't understand how far it is. This will be a difficulty of 60.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and they're like, oh. like, okay.
Although I do, no one
else is jumping, right? It's just me. Do I get a bonus?
I do log for the day where someone's like, okay. And they're just, boom, I make it.
Yeah. I just spend all my momentum to make this jump. And it's like, okay, yeah, breeze helps.
Yeah, the wind comes in.
Well, you know, you take the deer entrails and lower yourself a rope.
Reality bends slightly at this point, and they kind of get closer, but only for a moment. Mm-hmm.
That wasn't flying. It was falling with style.
25 years that movie came out. Looks terrible.
Yeah, it doesn't look as good. Still just as good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it definitely looks like one of those... Imagine 3D VHSs we used to have.
It's not as bad as, like, Ants.
No.
But.
Someone was trying to defend Ants to me recently.
There's no defending Ants.
Fuck you. Like, it's better than A Bug's Life. I'm like, go. Sylvester fucking Stallone. Fuck you.
So, along with skills, I guess I have another meta-level question. How often do we feel like dice and the possibility of being able to roll them gets in our way?
Whose way, the GM or the player?
Both. Let's say both, because I'm the player, and I'm like, can I just? I mean, I'm from this area. I've lived in this town my whole life. I don't know where the supermarkets are.
Well, that's it's up to a GM to be like, no, you're right. Like, just be like, mm-hmm. Oh no, you're right. You're from the next town over. You would at least know where blah 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 is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you try and use your best judgment with that. And there has been a lot of times I'm like, hey, I'm looking for this flower. And then I do make a roll, but not if they find it, if they're just around.
Right.
Like
right.
That kind of situation of, if they're around, it's a flower, you see it.
Yeah, and I guess there's the opposite of that, where I'm like, I've built this character to work in a certain way, and I get very excited when it gets to do it, right?
Yeah. Mm.
And then I go, okay, now I want to do this. And then the GM goes, well, you're so good, you don't have to roll for that. I'm kind of like, oh, well... That's why I came here to do.
Now you know what it's like to be Briggs when he wants to drive a car. It's like every time it's like, can I roll drive to get there? Or like, Briggs, as soon as you decide to roll, you are risking failure. Doug has not asked you for a roll. So if you just say, yes, I drive there, and Doug allows it, like, you do it automatically.
We are also just driving a car. This is not a, it's like, okay, so you drive to the store. And when you get there, well, can I roll to drive? And it's like, oh.
Okay, roll the turn.
I mean, there's no more risk in reality when I go out and drive. You know, there's a random chance someone's going to hit me.
Roll for your serpentine belt to break. It's like,
God,
I don't want to do
it. Man,
that.
Don't sorry. Yeah. Don't mention it. My car's right outside.
It just got too real.
It broke on my birthday this year. It was so... One, it was early lockdown. Mm. And I was like, just going to the store, going to pick up these things that I need. Turn the car on, and I just heard it go, and I was like, fuck.
Well, in terms of the game, as from a GM perspective, I wouldn't... It's weird how, as a GM, I tend to not want a role. I don't ask for a role unless I feel like there's a decent chance of failure, where I'm like, ah, well, you would like the flower. Like, oh, you'd find that. It's right there all over the place. But as a player... I do want to roll for everything because I have them sitting there right in front of me, and I just like,
rolling is fun.
Yeah.
I think so. Instead of being like roll for a flower, roll to find a flower. It's like roll to see how many you find.
Yeah,
yeah. That's
like,
a good.
Because you still want to roll dice. Like that's what you're here for.
Or do you find a good one? You know,
mm-hmm.
Like if you're looking for herbs
or four leaf clover.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to do it. And I do feel like it's as a DM, mm-hmm. I want to roll as little as possible.
Agreed.
Not to avoid things, but that I want my players to roll.
Yeah.
And I want me to roll less and them to roll more. And I think they would agree with
and
wanting
if like
to do that.
Early winter, you know, then the roll would come in, but like, oh, I'm looking for this flower. Like, oh, maybe you can find one under a tree somewhere. Like,
although I do think my least favorite role that players want to make all the time, because it's the thing that I actually really want to do and that some players are very uncomfortable with. I don't mind negotiation, diplomacy, or intimidate checks. Mm-hmm. But after you do it, you still got to do it.
Yeah.
I need those role-playing moments. I need those...
I really like those moments,
yeah.
But if a player naturally isn't very, like...
I don't force it.
...witty but... or whatever, I'm very forgiving with that. But I often will say, like, sometimes I will have a player role-play it first and then roll the dice to see how effective it is.
Because
if you role-play it well,
right.
I include that as a bonus.
Yeah,
as a player, I like the opposite. Only because I enjoy role playing. I like being like, I'm going to try to convince him of X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And then roll and I fail. And it's like, okay, instead I say, yeah. Like, doing that is, I think, is at least for me more fun.
Oh, no. I then make them role play them speaking badly about it. Like, you have to fuck this up.
Well, I feel like this one we kind of already do a little solving for with momentum, period.
Yes.
Because we'll go like, I am perfectly comfortable with a player being like, I don't know what I want to say. I just know I want to get this across, and I know my character's good at it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so it's those specific things you're trying to get across. Go ahead and give me a roll. They give you a roll, one, great job. But then they see the other players around the table being like, this, this, and this. You're like, okay, you know what? You failed that roll, but plus one momentum. You know, like that's
I do think we're already there. We're, man, getting to a point where you have a joke that doesn't land for you and lands for everyone else, and three other people are like, give this person who is not me stuff.
Yeah.
Because I did get something out of this. I got a very good joke. Or and
give me one momentum over 100 gold pieces for like.
Oh, yeah.
In the 3 months when we get to a store, you know.
Like, yeah. That one. By the way, that one momentum is going to give me way more mileage than like 100 gold pieces. Yeah. Like, I'm going to add it to the thing where I'm like, this needs to land.
Yeah, you've never been in a situation where it's like, I need to make that jump across the alleyway. I wish I had 100 gold on me. If I only had that much more gold, it'd be better. Like,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I maintain even if momentum wasn't used in leveling, momentum feels different, again, because of the narrative layer we put on it. With like, momentum is how you exist in a story. Mm. Getting momentum means that was your scene.
Yeah.
You were the one, like, if this was the movie that you were watching, you'd be like, that character's great. I love that character.
And you spend it when you're like, this is my moment.
Yes.
You know, that's...
This needs to happen for me. But it's even better when it doesn't.
Yeah. When you spend the momentum and you still fuck up, and then you're just like,
God,
oh,
that
even
moment,
worse.
It happens. Yeah. I do like how we quickly landed on the rule, never spend one momentum.
Yeah.
It's just not worth the risk of risking critical failure. If you're going to go, go hard.
But then, if you crit, you get it back.
Yeah.
Your axe goes flying six spaces away.
And you're just like, shit.
Well, no, it's not crit. If you get a natural 20.
Yeah.
Because if you roll a 1 and you're a rogue, like, you're not getting your momentum back. That's a fail-safe built in for damage. Okay. We're on level 6 now.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting there, and I kind of want to know what it's like to try to play a level 6 character.
All right.
And how tough is it really? You know what I mean? Like, do we have a hard time juggling all those balls at the same time, keeping all those plates spinning? I guess it would be the,
like a fucking, like,
all right.
13-year-old.
I kept it pretty.
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Listener,
Liam's sitting over there red faced with his lips pressed together, looking into everybody's eyes, waiting for us to laugh.
Listeners didn't know until that moment.
No, play the audio back, Josh.
You outed me.
Single out his audio and listen to it. You're going to hear him.
You said that while I was sitting over here with the D6 with the 3 that looks like balls. I've just been giggling for like 10 minutes to that.
So, level 6, would you guys want to do a short, quick test run as level 6 characters like we did for like level 10 dice tier characters?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I like to do that. I'll set up like a boss fight or something, and I'll set up something that where things happen in specific orders, and we can all just play it. And then we go, okay, well, next round now this happens, and next round now this happens. Because that's a constant worry of mine, is that we're throwing too much at players in bursts that are too hard to handle.
Okay.
And if we're spacing it out enough, but I think what we could do is make it so that we can each design our characters, and go any route you wish. Like, you level 6, however you want to do it.
Okay.
And see how tough that is. I mean, primarily, I
might just make a level 6 Regibald, because he was one of my favorite characters.
That could be fun.
Command Citadel is just saying, real fun.
What if we just did 3 command?
It would rip up everything. Yeah. However, I do think worrying about high-level cognitive load is important. I do think I am kvetching a bit about something that's not important right now, because right now focusing on what the new player experiences is probably most important.
Yeah.
And so far, I mean, it's okay. Like, the feedback we've gotten is mostly positive. However, it's from our friends mostly.
Yeah.
So they already like us, but
I think the test run is going to be important. Cause I even think the cognitive load of something like dailies or encounter abilities, and the fact that you're limited to 1 per encounter or 2 per encounter on one, makes that pretty easy. And I don't even think, like, by level 6 anyone has more than 4 at wills, right? Or I guess you could. You built your character that way.
Yeah, if you made a Tolden and then went step 1 down 2 other paths, you know, like, you could easily have multiple at wills.
But also, if you built that character, who are you? Why are you this way?
Why would you do this to your friends?
I'm a Swiss Army knife, and all of the knives are bad.
Well, I think actually it would probably work okay.
It'd be fine.
Yeah, because I mean, you're leveling up every time, so the damage and stuff is increasing. Doug, do you have any interest in GMing it?
Yes, especially since now I've been learning some of the different rule sets for different games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious to come back to it now, especially since you've all made so much progress on it.
Oh.
And to see, like, how easily can I slip into it, as opposed to, like, before I was like, I'm a little intimidated because I've never run, like, D&D before. You know, I've run, like, very theater of the mind, very non-combat focused stuff. So now this will be another way to test my limits. I've been trying to expand into a bunch of different games to try and, like, stretch that muscle to see, like, you know, I do one thing and I've done it really well. It's time to try other games. So this definitely needs to be in there.
I think it'd be great. Because in my experience GMing it, I mean, I know we did create it together, so I have a leg up on a new GM on understanding the system.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's been pretty easy to just be like, there's these many things, they do this, let's go. Like, and it's become a lot easier to increase the difficulty, because the numbers, unlike my experience with Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder and other systems, is it's less swingy. Mm. Ours doesn't have these big swings that, like, what we would consider a big swing in this system, which was like when I was playing Phryxa and I stab a guy and then blow him up with retributions, a big swing is nothing compared to critting
it's
in
like 30.
D&D. Yeah. It's not even close. So I think it's easier to GM as a result. Because if you just are like, okay, well, I'm going to increase everything by 1 for these enemies, you will see very easily that is, and it's also, that's not going to kill everybody accidentally.
Right.
You know, it's there's a lot less risk in making adjustments like that. But that goes into my next topic. We talked about creating tools to help GMs GM this.
Yeah.
What would those tools look like?
I think we would have to have something like a monster manual, but it would just be
use like code words for things like bruiser.
Yeah.
Like archetypes or whatever.
Yeah. Archetypes, possible abilities, and then you'd be like, okay, cool. Here's also a list of actual monsters that exist in the world of Urd or whatever mm-hmm. we're doing. And then be like, you know, if you want to chalk it up to this difficulty, make sure it's about here. Mm. And if it's this big or this advanced, throw an extra ability on it. Mm. Just pick from the ability chart. I think try to make the monsters as varied and plug and play as the path system is. Mm. I think that's the way to go.
That's what it's felt like making. I always try to be like, okay, well, for instance, we're doing the prison break is where we left off with ley liners.
You mean the Thin Lizzy? Yeah.
Yeah, the Thin Lizzy. The jailbreak. When I created, I'm like, you're going to face a bunch of guards. Doug would know more about this. Who gave the advice, give everybody a limp and an eye patch? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, that's a screenwriting thing. It's really fucking old. It's, I mean, that's like William Goldman old. I remember when we were playing early tests of this, you were very quick to point out, like, all right, you're fighting these, they're basically like gnolls or whatever, and you're like, this one has like a wooden leg and this one has an eye patch. That's whatever. I'm like, yeah. I see what you're doing, but this is cool. Because it was good to reference it as we were going around.
Yeah. It makes it a lot easier as a GM and for your players to know who's been hit, what, and just by giving everybody a limp and an eye patch,
yeah.
It's easier for everybody to visualize what's happening.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what I've done is like, I'll just write down like, oh, this red shirt, this one's got this, and like you switch up the weapons and all of our weapons have very specific bonuses or whatever. The encounter starts to design itself.
Yeah.
Like I'm making four guards when they have the same hit points. Mm-hmm. They're identical in every way. Now each one has a different weapon. Now this one's got a limp, so his movement speed is reduced, but he's real strong, so he does extra damage. Or this guy's really young and fast, so maybe I'll make him a Krex. And it's instead of it being this, oh, God, I don't know how to design an interesting encounter, you don't start with an interesting encounter.
Yeah.
You just go, here, they're going to fight four, and then just start changing small things, and that's...
That's way more my speed than...
Yeah. Just the way humans work, like... You have four guys and they're all wearing different colored shirts. And you're like, fuck blue guy. I'm killing that guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, fuck him. It's like, there's no difference between the four of them, but that guy's going down.
Yeah.
I think sometimes my favorite way to design an encounter, though, is to be like, okay, here's what the party is good at doing. I'm going to take away one of their tools. And they're going to have to adapt around that and then try and compensate and use another one. And that is always fun to see because the moment of panic lasts about a turn. And then they get through a turn without having one of the tools in their tool belt, and they're like, "No, I still think we got this. I still think we can manage this."
I also like the more like lately, and specifically in Leyliners, I'm like they're going to be fighting a bunch of guards. So when I throw a curveball on something that's a non-standard enemy, I want it to be memorable. However, I do kind of want to see how they deal against standard enemies because I do feel like having a standard enemy. Or something that feels like you stumbled into a room full of guards that it was a risk of happening. It makes the world feel lived in,
yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, not everything is an encounter just designed for you to come up against. However, making bosses in our system is very fun.
It's so fun.
It's so much more fun than I thought it would be, just because having them being able to act multiple times around means that the fight is going to have a direction and a flow that the let's take turns, bad guy goes, then all of the people go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's weird to flow, and it also makes the thing, to make them intimidating, it has to be a home run. They have an attack, it's a home run attack, or it's a bunch of tiny ones. The fact that you get to spread it out makes it more manageable for your healer to just deal
absolutely
with shit.
Nobody gets one shot as often.
Which is, again, another thing that I think we've done really well. I think playing a healer is good and fun, and I don't understand why more people aren't drawn to it. Or when they try to do it, they try to hybridize it so much, mm-hmm. and then really be like, well, I mostly do ice stuff, but I can heal. I'm like, nah, man, just use your cool sun laser. It's good.
Yeah.
It's so good. We made it so good.
Yeah, healers are good in this system. There's another So back to what the tool would look like, right?
Yeah.
Maybe just have it a way so that the page is asking interesting questions, right? So, like, maybe it's a spreadsheet we can make for them or some kind of grid, fill out, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, a template page where they can just write stuff in to help them build an encounter without too much anxiety, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it would be, like, the creature, what's it look like? Like, creature name, what does it look like? How much HP? All that standard stuff. But then we could use, like, a boss template, and we'll say, turn one, does it have, like, a movement action, a special action, like, something like
that? Or an attack. Yeah, the three basic ones that we've been dealing with is movement, special, like, conventional attack.
Yeah, or the real fun one, I think, is to have its first turn in a round be something that sets up something for its next turn, and then its final turn, if both of those previous ones landed, that last one is really going to blow up the party. And that gives them time. You know, it should be...
Yeah. Swallow a character.
Hey, that was a failed momentum roll.
That was
not what that character meant to do. However...
That's why in my campaign, I was like, I'm going to put 10 guys out there, but none of them know how to hold their weapons. They're bumpkin militia.
But that's fun, too. Yeah. Right? Makes the world feel lived in, and our characters felt like soldiers in there. But because we were just soldiers...
We were also ruthless.
Yeah. But also, we didn't feel so far above them that it felt like, you know, like any random bumpkin with a pitchfork could kill a soldier, you know, if they did. And if they rolled well enough and we rolled poorly enough.
And we weren't like Gulliver with the Lilliputs, you know.
Exactly.
We knew that if they got pissed off too much, it's a problem, you know.
Yeah. I think the problem... The scaling portion, and I've expressed worry about this before, but the thing that may make lower characters trivial faster than they should be, lower NPCs trivial faster than they should be, is how quickly we gain health, right? So we gain, like, Citadel gains 6 every level. If you up your stamina, it's 6 every level. We might be able to scale back on that later. I want to test it a bit.
Okay.
Like, maybe Citadel gains 6, regular melee gains 2, and somebody gains 1, but... It's very low, but if we can reliably make the damage scale this incrementally, that won't mean that you don't have enough health in late game, right? But I want to test it, because otherwise we just got to keep up in monster damage, which is what I'm fine with.
I don't know, just because of the way that armor already works, where, like, being a caster feels super squishy.
Yeah.
Which
I kind of dig about it.
It feels as squishy as D&D. And doesn't feel as canony, but it feels way more mobile.
Yeah.
And useful.
To go from Kelton to playing the archer.
Oh my God.
Was insane. Because Kelton could just stand and take whatever. And then the archer, like, I'm going to run up. Oh no, shit. I need to get back.
Yeah, this thing hits me twice. I'm dead. Yeah. But as an archer, you are a Gatling gun, right?
Yeah, especially that guy.
Yeah, like,
were the finishing blow. I think on something stupid like 30% of the enemies.
Esmond Trod, your fire mage, is just a grenade.
Yeah,
like just from a distance, just explosions, 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 and you're usually safe. Like if somebody runs up on you, it's everybody's emergency. Like the whole team is like, nope, gotta save him because if we could just get him some more distance, grenades are gonna keep going off. Yeah, I don't know. I like the damage output of casters at the moment.
Yeah.
I like.
Oh no, I'm just saying that if we scale down HP, that'll be rough on very, very rough on casters in a way that you could straight up reduce Citadel, and I don't even think you would notice it that much.
Mm-hmm.
6 less HP by step 3 or 4 because of the usually armor. How armored you are, you don't care. 5 less HP for Esmond I would be like, I don't know, dudes. I can't get hit twice.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah, I feel like that's, well, to leave the HP discussion out of it for now, because I just don't think we've done enough testing, you know, to really qualify. My worry is that it seems like damage is scaling faster.
HP is scaling faster than damage?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And to cope with that, things just need to deal more damage to PCs, right? So we didn't do any step 6 today, but it was nice to have Doug back.
Yeah.
It's always
sorry,
nice
I distracted
to see Doug.
From getting you off track, no, I guess, please. Or whatever.
No, it's great to have you. So those are kind of all like meta level concerns, and I wanted to bring them up here because I think the answers to them will force us to continue to be creative and not precious with the things we've already come up with, you know. To make it so that everybody's having a good time in late game, because I just thought of another question I want to ask.
All right, ask it.
Go.
All right, have we got time?
Ask it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so it kind of leads me into the final subject when I asked about, are people leveling up too fast? Mm-hmm. Is there too much cognitive load as they level? You know, how long should things go between X, Y, Z? All leads me to the question of, how long should a campaign be? Now, this seems like, why would you... I've been in the position where I'm like, why would you set a limit on it, right?
No, I think this is an important question.
Yeah, and I've found, when I'm a player character, I like knowing that there is an end, and I even like knowing how far along I am to the end, because I'm excited to play the next game, you know, and I want to live as this character, but I want there to feel like there's a goal and an ending.
And also, it's very important to say, multiple campaigns can have the same stars in it. That's, you could be running the same crew through multiple adventures, but it shouldn't be, I have heard tale, I've never done it, where it's like, yeah, this has been one quest. We've been doing it for 3 years.
Yeah.
And in game time, this has been a decade. I'm like, and you haven't reached a tangible goal? Like, no.
Well, okay. So I've actually played this and enjoyed it in Pathfinder. We're doing a Curse of the Crimson Throne campaign, right? And that's 6 books. It's supposed to get your characters from level 1 to level 17, 18. And it tells you that, like, when you open the book. It's like, it's designed to get your characters right from the beginning, right through to here, and the game will end about here. So, and every book is almost a self-contained adventure related to the rest.
Yeah.
So, what they'll do is the book has like, oh, celebration, you just complete whatever problem that was there. You're going to do all these things. Oh, it's a crazy adventure. Oh, there's new intrigue. There's this and that. And then, oh, we're getting close to this big climax of the second one that will lead us into the next thing. And then... congratulations, that was a big finale of book 2.
Yeah.
And then we'll move on. So in those terms, I found that to be very enjoyable, right? In terms of like... But if you ask how long should a campaign be? Well, they say, well, this one will last 6 books. It'll get you from level 1 to level 17. The knowledge of that as a player going in, I think, is useful. Where you're saying, what's this campaign? You know, we haven't written any campaigns. Not in their entirety. We've written arcs, much in a way like books, you know? So, what do we...
I think you want to know if you're on the British office or the American office. Are you doing 6 episodes?
You do want to know. You want to know that.
Are you doing 32?
Right.
You know, like...
So, the reason why I ask that is because, let's say, whatever the book 1 equivalent of ours is, specifically Leyliners or Echoes of the Star Crypt, that first adventure, if you asked how far should they get, I would have said... anywhere from we started 0.
Yeah.
Level 0 to level 2, maybe level 3. Right? Like, that's as far as you could reasonably go to progress.
And that's what we hit.
Yeah. But then, like, in this next one, it's span over a city. I would say anywhere from level 2 to 3, starting 2 to 3, all the way through level maybe 7. So this may seem like splitting hairs, but it's an important question because... it will determine how we look at leveling up in terms of like where should a player be by X time. So if you get a level 10 character, is that end game? Level 9, you've got step 10.
Well, I mean, you could
if you go one path.
But you might want to tell a story where you start at level 5. You
know? Yes, but that's different, right? Yeah. So like if you create a D&D character at level 20, that's end game. Like you're starting at end game. Yeah. This is one final world war or whatever you're doing.
Well, their power at that point is also...
yeah.
Especially if you're a caster.
You're God.
Yeah, I don't think a 10th step...
it's not going to be anywhere near that.
Zealot isn't...
But we're not...
Isn't a literal God.
Yeah, but I don't think we wanted to go in that direction anyway.
No.
Like,
no.
It was never meant to be like, can you be a demigod by the end of this? It was more of like, no, you're living in a world where magic is, you know, this and this and this, and it's fairly realistic.
Yeah, I would say, because there's literally, apotheosis is a thing in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes.
And Battlefighter.
It's a prestige path in epic levels.
Yeah, getting rid of those, I would say, what is a 10th level death look like? I would say an extremely powerful lich, right? You're not a god on the power level. You don't become a lich. I'm just saying, like, you could have an army. You know, you're the scourge of a whole nation. Like,
oh, I was gonna say I agree with that. Like, but rather than like, you're Idi Amin, like that's what you're at. You're an accomplished boxer. You were a sergeant in a colonial empire. You became the leader of your country's army. And you had a violent coup, and then eventually you just had to leave.
Yeah, and I would say like...
So you want to be the necromancer, not Sauron.
Yes, that's a good... Yeah. And I would say for like, if you're step 10 command, I would say you're like Ender from Ender's Game, right? Like you're that's your level. You can control entire armies remotely. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, but you're not the God Emperor of Mankind.
Correct. No. Yeah. that's
you can actually do something.
Oh, that's throwing real shade, Max. Don't let the Imperium hear you say that.
Throwing heresy is what it's
Dark Angels. We waited.
I'm trying to think.
Let's see who wins.
And like Citadel, like you are the legendary knight.
Yeah,
you know that's what you are.
You are literally a wall.
Yeah,
like you could be King Arthur, like maybe.
Yeah,
pull the sword out of.
I'm saying full Galahad because like King Arthur was not the best fighter.
Sure,
his own court.
Sure. Yeah,
and I would say like step 10 champion, you are Sigurd, the warrior of legend. You know, like you're the. The one who slays the dragon.
You are a once in a generation, almost monster.
And I remember we've had these kind of conversations before. The idea of like you get to again arbitrary number level 10, and you're like, well, where do you go from there? It's like, well, I want to keep going. It's like, well, now you're going to take up some other thing. Yeah. Now you're going to learn magic, and now it's like, all right, I it's like Skyrim. I became head of the Thieves Guild. Now I'm going to be head of the Dark Brotherhood. Like,
but at that point, like, who would want to keep you around? Like, if you're a king, you don't want Sigurd living in your.
No.
Because everyone's like, why don't we make him king?
Yeah.
Like,
he just knows how to kill things.
You become Galahad. You're like, it's time for me to ride off in the sunset, and I'm going to go learn magic. And like, I'm scared for him to ever return.
But the whole thing is, I think we already, I think that we have a solution to that because I think the society and the population that we presented in our world is large and robust enough to be like, yeah, and then... Patton went to the country. No, like no one cares.
Yeah. Before we talk about epic levels beyond getting to step 10 and then taking on another path and all of that stuff. Before we talk about any of those, because I think we have talked about this before and we said, oh, you can pick up a new core.
Yeah.
You know, once you get to step 10.
Can we do like the long walk or whatever?
Yeah. Well, let's think in terms of campaigns, right? Mm-hmm. So a campaign has a reasonable beginning and ending, and however you want to get there is fine, but generally you will be level, because our levels work differently. Mm-hmm. Level 10 is good because you've gained 10 levels, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we can think for that in terms of balancing, in terms of where the pace of progression. If that makes sense.
So, like, because remember you were saying, like, how long should a campaign be? Should a camp, just as a rule of thumb, should, like, for example, a campaign be, like, you're, air quotes, guaranteed 3 levels per campaign? So if you do 3 campaigns, you get the full...
No, campaign is beginning to end.
More long? Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, like, right. the full adventuring life of a character, generally... is what people talk about campaigns. Adventures are
I hate that because that is not what a campaign is.
That's cuz I feel like fine. Yeah, I feel like
you can
this is the colloquialism.
I know,
right.
But it's stupid. Soldiers served in multiple campaigns in one war.
That's how I've been thinking of like whenever I'm talking about a campaign, I think
usually think of
like he went on a campaign of something and then came back and he did 3 tours of the campaign.
Like 3 or 4 sessions to me is a campaign cuz there should be. By the time you do 3 or 4 sessions, if you don't have some kind of resolution, then what are we doing?
Yeah, well, I don't really want to reinvent the wheel on the terminology.
Right.
So, actually, let me rephrase that. I desperately want to, but it would be stupid to
not
do
right
so.
Now.
That's not the time.
So
we'll get in arguments on the internet over this later.
So when I say campaign, I'm talking about the adventuring life of a character in one specific setting and story.
Sure,
160
okay.
hours.
If I say an adventure, maybe I'll say a book. How about that? Okay. Would that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
One book of this campaign.
Sure.
Is this stretch of adventure.
Okay.
So I think it's important to think about things from beginning to end like that because as a GM doing Leyliners, I now that you guys are... What level is Esmond now? 5?
4, I think.
4?
Okay, so he's 4. But now at level 4, I'm starting to think, where does this character want to end up? Like, what's the ride off into the sunset if he lives? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what would be a good way to send off this character? And I got to kind of... I don't get to decide all of that for myself, but I have to start thinking about what's a resolution that would satisfy the player and the rest of the other players for that character has done what it came here to do, and it's over, right?
A lot of that's a narrative, though.
It's all narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
I think for Esmond, it's probably beating Kelton to death in the middle of a crowded street.
And no one stops.
Lots
him.
Of witnesses.
No, actually, I know exactly what that moment is, and no one else gets to
don't
know.
Tell me. Don't tell me.
I was going to say, for Savathian, it should just be swimming back in the ocean, like, I'm going to figure this shit out.
I'm level 10. And I'm for, going.
Yeah. Get the handkerchief on a stick. Yeah. Dive in.
A bindle?
Yeah, bindle it.
For a guff, it's just have any civilized person be like, you're good. You're fine. You're allowed to stay now.
All right. Well, I've introduced a lot of high-level stuff here to think about, and it's really interesting because anytime we have a discussion like this, there's a risk of losing focus, a risk of kind of getting into the weeds and not completing the game. However, the further we get, the more I start to think the loose ends we don't even have names for yet.
Yeah.
And we've got to kind of put them in categories at least so that we can tie them all together later.
Yeah. So we think of sessions as like chapters.
A session is you sitting down.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Like,
but in a way that, yeah, those are
chapters to the book.
Yeah,
to the book. And then the book creates a series.
Yeah. Do you want to try to use book terms for this?
I was thinking
that's,
yes.
That's an easy entry point, so why not?
Yeah.
And again, also on theme, more on and everything that we can do to be on the theme that, like, this is a story game.
Mm-hmm.
I am all for.
Session zero will be prologue.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not
bad. Yeah, that's good.
I love that, actually.
But, here's my problems with books, is that a lot of books have books in them.
Yeah.
Like, this book, it says, here I open this book, and it says book one, it's this, book two is this, book three is this.
Keeping it simple enough, if it's just each time you sit down is a new chapter.
Yeah.
Tonight's chapter.
Yeah.
Don't give me that bullshit about, like, technically a chapter could be a group of people. If it's like, no, I'm talking about a chapter in a book, for fuck's sake.
Like, well, we've already said, like, we've already broken things down by scenes.
Yeah.
Right? So they're not so much encounters, they're scenes. Like, okay, in this scene, you're going to have a fight, you're going to have an escape, you're going to do this.
So we'll go from
which is a solid
scene,
chapter.
Yeah, scene to chapter. Then book would be the stand-in for an adventure.
Yes, and then we'll use the industry standard term campaign for the overall arc.
Or collection.
I would prefer series. I would prefer
series.
Epic.
Implies,
memoir.
Saga.
I like.
Okay, we could do saga.
Because the saga can kind of keep on going. Like, you don't know how many books are in it.
Did you know that saga is an Icelandic word that means saga?
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, it's a long story.
Will you tell us?
It's like, hey, do you know the meaning behind the word saga? It's a long story.
Yeah. It's like that or Odyssey.
Well, the whole thing is, I think saga is infinitely a better word, like, because again, campaign has a meaning and none of them fit well into the way that it's used in the RPG context. It's not really a campaign unless there's a war in it.
Right.
Also, campaigns are the accomplishment of a specific goal. Like, we kicked you out of North Africa. Campaign done.
Well, so in the Pathfinder and D&D world, that is very precise. Like, you start the campaign knowing that a storm giant has taken over the mountains and is trying to kill all the little peoples of the world. You're trying to overthrow him. And that's the campaign. The goal starting out. Very specific goal. You don't know how you're going to get there, how you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's...
I like a cold open. I like to be like, this is your dude. You're going here. Oh, no. We've wound up in a much larger situation than we first intended. Mm-hmm. I always like that story better.
I've had it multiple ways. Like your mom. And I like it. Like your mom, multiple ways.
With a cold open.
Yeah. I just don't... The more we get into changing the words that we use, the more I think we actually create barriers for people switching over.
True.
You know what I mean? Like, that's my biggest worry.
Well, the literary entry, I think that's easy. I mean, I was going to say everyone reads books, but not everybody reads books.
Yeah. I will say, if you're the type of person to run a game like this, I bet you've read a book or two.
Yeah, the idea of
we could just use adventure. How about that?
Yeah,
that's people will get that.
Yeah,
no problem.
And that's what
this
exactly
is your adventure.
Is.
First book of this adventure.
Yeah,
is this?
I'm using saga.
And when
fine.
But you string enough adventures together, then you got a saga.
Yeah.
All right, that's good enough. Episode 49 in the bank or in the bank
in the can
in the can
in the can.
Wait, this is a second cans reference of today, man. You put cans on your head.
I want to nominate use film thermography. This is a reel one. That'll be your first sit down session. Is the first reel.
Act one.
Actually, of reel one.
Acts and scenes are also not a bad.
I don't think they. Okay. I don't think that acts work in this format
because of the structure. Yes.
Yeah. However, Thank you, everybody. Yeah. Thank you, all of our listeners. We love you very much. Mwah. Goodbye. Sleep good.
Stay safe.
No, you got to do the
thing. Don't get sick.
You got to do the sign off, dude.
Stay safe, Sandwatch.
Wear a mask.
Hand sanitize and get a good rest.
Yeah.
Take your showers.
Wash your ass.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. If the game we're making sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RPGFS. $1 patrons get access to the cutting room floor, where all of the off-topic comedy that was cut out of episodes is curated for your enjoyment. $2 patrons get the updated character sheets that they can use to make their own characters in our system. $5 patrons get access to every rulebook we release as we update them. $10 patrons get to create custom NPCs for use in our actual play podcast, Leyliners. Also, if you enjoy the show, please rate and review us on Podchaser and Apple Podcasts. Every review helps. If you want to reach out to us with your gameplay ideas, please comment on our Patreon or tag us on Twitter. We are at Homebrew Hombres. Thank you all again, and until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.